This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear. But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Only in theaters June 14. Get tickets now.
14, Mission 2, San Jose Avenue.
From our 901 Mission Street studios, you are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle.
Welcome to The Big Event and my Stories from the Archive episode with Chronicle librarian Bill Van Niekerken. Since The Big Event started, the Archive's been a character in these episodes. It's often the first thing I'm talking about with a guest when the podcast starts. Rami Malek was obsessed with our 1989 earthquake photos. I showed Boots Riley images of his father leading a San Francisco State protest in the 1960s. And sometimes we bring out a big file with actual photos of our guest. Here's John Travolta's review of the Archive from earlier this year after I showed him our Travolta file and some old Clipper plane photos taken on Treasure Island.
I'm so blown away by this atmosphere right now with all these files, but more specifically, these photographs that you have of me that I haven't seen since they were taken. But moreover, I love the actual photographs. These are pictures of me in a DC-3 I had, an old airliner, and one of the planes that I haven't seen any pictures of me. And so it's so subjective right now, my excitement, that anyway, I'm really glad to be here.
So I thought it was time to get Bill on and actually describe the Archive to our listeners and share some of our biggest archive finds over the years, including the story behind Bill's incredible discovery of 100 lost The Last Waltz concert photos. This episode was also inspired by our latest big archive discovery. We found a binder filled with 640 images of the occupation of Alcatraz taken by Vince Maggiore, who embedded with the Native Americans 50 years ago this week. My story about that, including an interview with Vince, is on www.sfchronicle.com, where Bill and I share all of our archive finds. Really enjoyed this episode. We cover everything from archive ghosts to Amelia Earhart. We're your concierge for culture in the Bay Area. I'm Peter Hartlob, and this is The Big Event. Welcome to The Big Event, and welcome to the Archive, Bill Van Niekerken, which sounds weird because you're kind of like the phantom of the Archive.
Well, I hide down here a lot, you know, and a lot of times I'm down here scanning negatives for hours, and there's nobody at my desk, so it's like I'm not really here.
Does it scare you when I come in? Because I'm kind of me and cleaning people, and now we'll talk about it. There's some construction going on, but I'm the only one who comes in. Ever get scary?
Not really. It's either you or it's like one of the building services people checking the lights or looking for critters running around down here.
Yeah. Physically, I mean, we should tell people the Archive of the Chronicle is in the basement of the Chronicle. So we're pretty much underground right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there used to be a press down here when I first started back in 1985.
Yeah.
But that was way down in the sub-basement.
Yeah, there's a basement. I just found this out today, Bill, by the way. They were doing some construction here. We're moving the Big Event Archive Studio to a new kind of annex to the Archive, and they brought me down to look at furniture. I've been here 20 years, Bill. I didn't know there was like this whole big underground cavern. It looked like a cross between like Batman's like cave and maybe if like H&R Block was getting rid of all their furniture and they put it in Batman's cave. That's what it reminded me of.
Oh yeah, it's it's a little more organized than it used to be, but it kind of looks like a dungeon.
Yeah.
Where maybe they put reporters who constantly miss their deadlines.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. That hasn't happened to me yet. I want to talk a little bit. We're here to talk about our favorite archive finds, maybe get a couple of white whales in there, things we're looking at. But I wanted to start by just sort of describing this archive a little bit. And I thought a good way to start would just be your first day at work here. You said it was the mid-1980s when you were hired?
In 1985, I'd worked for 5 years in at the Mercury News down in San Jose at the Knight Ritter building,
yeah,
which was relatively new, and it was all on one level. And they had the presses there. They had everything in this one building.
Yeah.
And when I started here at the Chronicle, it's this, of course, this four-story building with a massive basement.
Yeah,
a
historic building. It was built in the 1920s across the street from the Mint, kitty corner at the time to the Emporium. And it's this stately building. We've done research. It was supposed to be 10 stories tall. They stopped at 3. But it's a beautiful 3 stories with a clock on the corner. Nice building.
Right. Yes, it really stands out down here. It's, you know, it's closing on 100 years old. And but when I got here, the library had looked pretty fairly primitive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the photos and clips were in file cabinets, and they were double deck in the newsroom,
uh-huh,
back where the food section is now. And so the photos, I think, were on top, and the clip files were on the bottom. So you'd have to go upstairs to find the photos.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a room. It was just these like file cabinets on top of each other, about 20 feet high.
Yeah, and I remember when I was hired and moved over, I was hired at the Examiner and then moved over to the Chronicle. I remember those stacks, and they had they were really close together, and you could move them apart by turning the circle around. It almost seemed
that's the modern setup.
Yeah. Oh, that's newer, because that felt like submarine technology. I always felt like I was in a ship or something.
Well, yeah, those were crank shelving that would open and close, and and the trick was, if you were inside, nobody could hear you, and you couldn't hear anything. So you'd be in there looking at a photo, and all of a sudden the walls would start coming in on you. And I had a couple close calls, as did other people there in the library, where you almost got crushed.
Yeah, the Star Wars trash compactor scene, I think, is the moment in pop culture that we'll compare that to.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I wanted to ask, too, just how your job's changed. Because you're talking about cutting out clippings. I'm guessing that's a lot of what you were doing in the beginning. That's not what I see you doing very much now.
Well, that's what I did when I first started at the Mercury News. I worked the early morning shift, and the first thing you did was you clipped out the stories from the paper, and then you filed them. And then when I started from the Chronicle, there was like a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks who had been here the longest were the ones who added the subject headings, and the newbies would then file those clips into the envelopes.
Uh-huh.
And when I first started here, I did a lot of that.
Yeah.
So then you'd file photos, and you know, the photo filing wasn't the funnest work.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would put it off, and I ended up doing since I was the new guy, I ended up doing a lot of photo filing.
And now, I think, you know, you write a column now. I think a lot of your job is finding photos for stories.
Right.
It's changed a lot.
Oh, totally. And I'm having more fun than I've ever had. It's just, you know, I'm going into the photos. I'm going to the negatives. I'm finding things that haven't been seen for decades and getting them online. It's, you know, I learn something new every day. It's just fun to come into work.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to kind of capture in this podcast a little bit. And I thought a fun way to do that would be to just each pick a few of our favorite kind of surprise or random or, you know, just stunning finds over the years. I've been down here about 11 years. I've told the story on the podcast that, you know, I was writing my parenting blog, and there was a two-headed snake at the Steinhardt Aquarium. And we couldn't figure out from Google whether this is something we had imagined and whether it existed. You handed me a lanyard. I came down here or I went to wherever the photos were. And then just like something sparked in me. From then on, I've been doing a lot of archive journalism. I've found in those 11 years some stunning things. I'm thinking like you can top me at every turn.
I don't know. You found some great stuff.
Yeah.
I still love those Willie Mays photos you found.
Yeah, I've found a few Willie Mays finds. And you have found the biggest archive find in history, which we're going to end with. But I wanted to let you start, and just if you have something that you're down in the archive, you found it, don't just tell me what you found, but tell me like kind of how you found it, because I think that's kind of interesting how we kind of stumble into things down here.
Well, a lot of times I'll find something, you know, as you've pointed out before, you often come down here, look for one thing, and find something even more amazing.
Yeah.
And one example was I was down here looking for of a photo of Bob Dylan playing with the Grateful Dead, and so I'm down there in the negative envelopes looking at Bob Dylan, and just behind the Bob Dylan envelopes, I see a pack of negatives that say Amelia Earhart, Last Final Flight. And it's just, you know, I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, because one, I didn't know she had any kind of Bay Area connection. I just assumed she was from New York.
Yeah.
And flew out of there. But she used to fly into Oakland quite a bit. And so we had two or three packs of negatives of her and her crew out there in Oakland. And this is the 1930s. We have very few photos from 1930 and almost no negatives. So this was a good find.
Yeah.
It was very exciting.
What year was this that you found it?
Oh, gosh, I was going to look it up, and I didn't. It's, I'd say 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, because I do remember it. And, yeah, I mean, Amelia Earhart. I mean, and it's just so fitting, too, because Amelia Earhart is synonymous with mysteries.
Right.
And, you know, and here you just stumble into it, looking for A, get detoured into B, and then you find C, and that's your story. That's how it is down here so much.
Yes, it happens like that a lot.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
Yeah, so we printed those. Did you write a column? Or did
I did.
You
I did
them?
A From the Archives column on it. A couple of them needed a little bit of cleaning up. You know, when I first started doing this, I had very little training on the proper way to scan these things and how to clean them up. But I took a little bit of But I took a Photoshop class and practiced a little bit, and so I was able to get some of the cracks out of the sky.
Uh-huh.
There was one of the negatives where a crack went across her face,
yeah.
And I tried to fix that with Photoshop, and she looked, by the time I was done, she didn't look like a human. So,
yeah.
So I ended up giving up on that one.
Yeah, and usually we're making changes, you know, I mean, to get dust specks out, but sometimes there's just like a little line just crossing someone's face, and then it's kind of just got to be there. Yeah. Moving on, I'm gonna pick mine. Mitt Romney at the, I believe it was the 1960 Republican convention at the Cow Palace. At that point, Mitt Romney is running for president, and I get a tip from my friend Bob Calhoun, who has written a book about conventions. You can get it on you know, Amazon or your local bookstore or whatever. And he tipped me off, hey, did you know, like just on Twitter, he's like, did you know Mitt Romney was at the 1960 convention? He was a teenager and he was there when his dad had this kind of failed, I don't like using the word coup right now because it's getting bandied about, you know, meaning other things. But at the time it was like George Romney was trying to take over at the convention and he failed,
right.
And Mitt Romney was there. So I'm like, really? Well, we have convention photos, so let's see if I can find him. And these are like still in the right now we have a lot of 35 millimeter negatives from the like 70s and 80s. These were 4x5 negatives.
Right.
They're very big negatives, often taken on a tripod. So when you blow them up, you can blow them up really big and the image holds together. Even more than like the 70s or 80s.
It's really incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, just when you scan from those large negatives and then open up the view, it's with the smaller negatives, it gets blurry.
Yeah.
But with these big negatives, you can get incredible detail.
Yeah. So I'm blowing up. I'm basically playing Where's Waldo, looking for Mitt Romney. And it was helpful. We had a bunch of these negatives, and I'm looking and I'm blowing it up. I couldn't even use a photo loop, which is, you know, I couldn't look on a light table. The heads were too small. I had to scan them and then blow them way up on the computer. And finally, I figured out, well, he was with the Michigan delegation, so I'll look under those signs. And I blew up like 6 or 7 negatives and then found him. Found him just chatting with a couple of other young people. And we actually subsequently found some photos of him with his family, like walking into the, you know, it was a press conference or something like that. And he's with his mother and found all these Mitt Romney photos while he was running for president off a tip off Twitter.
That's really cool.
Where's Waldoing it?
Yeah.
That was super fun for me. So yeah. that's like in my top two or three. You got one more other than the big one?
Yeah. I was down here doing a little cleaning up, I guess, about 7-8 years ago, maybe perhaps even longer.
Yeah.
And there's this beat up old box sitting on top of the file cabinets that hold the negatives, and so I pulled on the box to see what's in it, and there's all these negatives from the 1939 Golden Gate International Exposition.
Yeah,
there's probably more photo or negatives in there than all our other 1930s negatives combined. So we have this fantastic collection of photos from that exposition that was out on Treasure Island. It was such a great success in 1939 that they brought it back for 4 months in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great shots in there. And I've already gotten a couple columns out of it, and I plan on getting a couple more out of it. So
yeah.
that was a great find.
Yeah, I always say this is just a renewable resource down here. I could go the rest of my career and write nothing but archive stories, and I would not run out of good stories down here. Mm-hmm. But that's a good one, just random box. And we're surrounded. I'm looking around. I mean, there's just random boxes surrounding us. Who knows what's inside?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm sure we're going to have some great finds.
Yeah. My next one is the Grateful Dead debutantes.
Oh, I love that one.
And I don't remember actually what the genesis was. It might have been a tip from you, and it might have been me stumbling into it. I think it was a tip from you. But Grateful Dead... Before they were the Grateful Dead, they were, what was their name?
The Warlocks.
Warlocks, yeah. Thank you. And they were playing in little pizza parlors right around, I think, 65, 1 year into being the Warlocks. And Grateful Dead fans, I apologize, I'm probably getting some of this wrong.
I think they were the Grateful Dead by then, but they were still in their very early stages.
Yeah, so very, very early stages, they played a debutante ball. And this has been mentioned in a couple of Grateful Dead books. This is not unknown that they played this debutante ball in Hillsboro. But, you know, there aren't a lot of photos out there. There really weren't any photos out there. It was just above a myth. We knew that it happened.
I had never heard of it.
Yeah. I had never heard of it either. And our Grateful Dead photos here, some little areas, our music photos, a lot of them are missing, especially like a hot band like the Grateful Dead. Someone... some point borrowed them or took them or whatever, but we don't have a lot of Grateful Dead photos already.
No, not from the 60s at all.
No. So someone, it might have been you, it might have been I stumbled into it, but a Society column mentioning these two debutantes, and just as an aside, and the band from San Francisco called the Grateful Dead played. And I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, let's do a little bit of a deeper dive for that. So I look. Of course, they're not with the Grateful Dead because there's very little there. So I looked under the debutantes' names.
Fantastic.
And it shows up the photos, a big pack of negatives that are filed under these two debutantes, Mattei, M-A-T-T-E-I, I think was their last name. No mention of the band or anything on the negative packet. It's just like, you know, debutante ball, yeah. La Dolphine, the Mattei twins, whatever. So I go and start laying them out on the light table. There's like 50 of them. And I go through like the first 30, and it's just a bunch of Society photos. I mean, posed photos of old people and young people in gowns next to fountains.
Tuxes involved.
Yeah, lots of tuxes. Lots of people standing, you know, I think they had a couple photos of the mansion, and I'm like, oh, that's too bad. Get to, like, the last five, and there's two photos. They're posed photos. It's a couple in a gown and a tux sitting on the stairs in front of kind of this raised area, and they're posing. And in the back of them, clear as day, is Phil Lesh, Pigpen, and I think Bill Kreutzmann.
Yeah.
Jerry is obscured and Bob Weir is obscured. But
right.
There's two excellent photos of the Grateful Dead performing while everyone's ignoring them and this couple is posing right in front of them.
Yeah, I love those shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I haven't really actually written a full-blown story. I did a little thing when we found them. I've got the emails for the debutantes. I've got a lot of people when I showed the photos sent me their stories, and I've got a bank of emails, and I'm hoping to someday write some kind of oral history of the Grateful Dead who played the debutante ball. But
well, I've done a little bit of looking.
Yeah.
But the Grateful Dead played the opening of North Face.
What?
In the city here. Right around, maybe a year later.
Yeah.
And I've looked for negatives and never found any.
Yeah.
But hopefully, between the two of us, we'll find those.
Well, we're going to talk wish list at the end. So I think that's my new top of the wish list is Grateful Dead playing North Face. Or there's a lot of rumors or stories about Carlos Santana playing the Burlingame Recreation Department or whatever.
It's true. I'm a bit older than you.
Yeah.
And I know people who went to that show, and I saw Tower of Power play at the Burlingame Rec Center.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think there's photos.
Yeah, well, you never know. Yeah. You never know. We have photos of another one we haven't shown yet is Tam Hai, George Lucas, filming the American Graffiti scene there.
Yes.
And I never thought we'd have that. So
those are really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But talking about the big one, this is just archive lore here. And you actually brought the negatives, which emit a holy glow as you lift them up.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was in the early days of when I first started from the archives. And I was doing something on Bread and Roses. And I was looking for a photo of Joni Mitchell playing with B.B. King at a Bread and Roses concert. So I started scanning some negatives, and it's obviously an indoor show.
Uh-huh.
So I know there's something wrong here because all the Bread and Roses shows were at the Greek Theater, and they were outdoors.
Yeah, and read the front of the negative packet.
Well, the front of the negative packet says Joni. It's filed under Joni Mitchell, and it says Joni Mitchell, singer at Bread and Roses Concert, Berkeley. And this is in October 1980.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of dates stamped on it and the name of the photographer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I keep scanning, and I notice that these are all indoor shots. And then and there's some people milling around. And then I start seeing some people dancing the waltz.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm starting to wonder that, oh, my God, could this be the last waltz? Negatives.
Do you allow yourself to even think that? I mean,
no.
This is the biggest concert in San Francisco history.
I mean, I've looked for photos before and not found even any photos.
Yeah.
And so I keep scanning, and pretty soon I'm recognizing some of the people on stage. There's Joni Mitchell. There's Bob Dylan. There's the band up there. And we have, there's about 25, 30 strips of negatives. That's almost 100 photos.
Yeah.
And so this is just a great find. And I put it up, and I show John King, who is a big fan of the band. He's our architecture writer. And I talked to Sam Whiting, who's one of our culture writers. And my From the Archive gets shared and gets over.
Well, before we go there, I mean, let's just put it in context. As I said, I think the biggest concert in San Francisco history.
Right.
The band is playing their last concert.
It's the band's final concert, and Bill Graham has gone all out. There's a symphony orchestra there to play music while he serves Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
And Martin Scorsese is filming it all.
Yeah.
And there's lots of special guests, and it's just, tickets sold out immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, even if I had thought of going, there was no way I was ever going to find it.
I've actually looked at our old stories about, there were stories about all the people who wanted to go and couldn't get in and couldn't believe they couldn't get in because there were big deals around town. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I knew I wouldn't get in because tickets just were gone.
Yeah. So you scan these. I've seen the negatives. Yeah. They're beautiful negatives. I mean,
well, Gary Fong took the photos.
Yeah,
and he was. You know, I had also seen him some photos he took of a Grateful Dead Who show at the Oakland Coliseum, and there were some great images. So it was all very promising. And as I scan, I recognize more and more people. And it's sort of amazing who was there. Dr. John was there. Neil Diamond was there, Van Morrison, of course, Bob Dylan. Let's see another name. Eric Clapton was there. And And just, you know, the photos, you know, again, these, you know, these from the negative, I scan them at a very high resolution, and I was able to kind of zoom in on, you know, on some of the individual performers, and it's just, you know, they were just great.
So I recall it like at the end of the year that was the most viewed story on sfchronicle.com.
Right. It's been surpassed a couple of times, but I talked to one of the editors, and he said it may have been the first thing we put up that went over a million page views.
Yeah. Oh,
and it went over almost immediately.
Yeah.
So it was a big hit. Yeah. And when they were doing Rounder Records was putting out a reissue, uh-huh. and they bought some photos from us from that set for the CD box.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that we're ever going to surpass that, but I did want to talk just a little bit about the Alcatraz negatives, which, you know, really spurred the thought of having this podcast episode. And that's in a story that's in the Chronicle by the time you're listening to this. We found 640 negatives in a binder from the Alcatraz occupation. All but a handful of them have never been seen.
Right. Right. They're great photos. I think, well, Vince Majora, one of our photographers, took them, and I think he had a lot of personal interest in the cause, and he spent a lot of time out on the island, and you can tell by the photos that there was a ease in the interaction between the photographer, the reporter, and the people out there occupying the island.
Yeah, and I talked to Vince for the story, and he really downplays his importance in it, which is like him. He's a very modest person, but he had come to the Chronicle the year before, and even before he came to the Chronicle, he was known for covering protests.
Right.
And then he gets to the Chronicle, he's the youngest guy. You've still got, you know, Joe Rosenthal and Bob Campbell and all these kind of legends here.
Both those photographers were on Iwo Jima.
Yeah. So, I mean, and Clem Albers is still there. You know, yeah. He also shot some very significant photos of some of the prison camps in the United States. And anyway, Vince is in this position where he's getting all the assignments no one wants, which he told me was society assignments and protests. Like, yeah. None of these older guys want to go and get knocked on the head, and right. he's young.
Did. Vince did get knocked on the head, I think, at least one of them at San Francisco State.
Yeah, he did. A lot of our photos of San Francisco State and Berkeley, the protests in the 60s are Vince's. So I think he knew these people from that.
Right.
And I don't know how politically aligned he was. I asked him about that, and I think he was liked the people who were doing it and were sympathetic to what they were doing, but... part of his comfort in being there, I think, is because he had just, you know, been in the protest community so much and they knew who he was. These photos are incredible. I mean, yeah. he thinks around 4 or 5 days from the initial landing and on the boat to as these people are kind of building their society and they, you know, start a little school for the kids. There's children on the island at the initial Alcatraz occupation in 1969, and then Vince came back when the church burned, the church and the warden's house burned, and there was a lot of controversy surrounding that, and then he came back in 71 when the last of the occupiers were removed. So very, I mean, stunning find. Bill, it was in a binder, just again, kind of, we don't know exactly where it came from.
It was like a black box that may have at one point held a tray, you know, how there used to be those circular trays of negatives.
Yeah.
It looks like it was that kind of box, and these negatives were in strips of 5 and 6, and we usually deal with strips of 3, so it was like no one's touched them since then.
Yeah.
So it was pretty, you knew that there was going to be some good stuff in there, and he really captures how bleak the existence must have been out there on the island.
Difficult, yeah. I mean, they didn't have water. They had to bring in water. I mean, yeah. It was not an easy life. I tell people, like, I don't see ghosts down here. Like, I'm never scared to be down here. I've never had any, you know, seen any visually scary things. But I do get this little supernatural vibe sometimes when I'm down here, because either what I'm looking for will just like suddenly appear in a weird place, or something like this, where it's just like, you know, but now this binder came from one of our photo editors, but I've had other examples where, you know, it's kind of like your box full of negatives from the exhibition on Treasure Island, where it's just like, where did that come from? I didn't notice it before. It just seems, you know, magical.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then some of these are very touching and tragic stories, and it's, you know, it's hard not to get, you know, get absorbed into the story as you're scanning the photos, because you're seeing people often, you know, you're looking them in the face.
Yeah. Well, I think we have enough for a sequel. We could talk about our glass negatives that we found that we still haven't shown the world, but 1907 glass negatives, Dwight Clark's fur coat. I had a lovely, fun journey trying to find Dwight Clark's fur coat that he wore for Super Bowl 16. But I wanted to get a few on our wish list that, and just kind of end with a few things that we haven't found, but we're always kind of keeping an eye out for, and things that you hope to someday find down here. Bill, you got any?
Well, when I started down here, there were photographers' names I recognized that went back so far, and the longer I worked down here, I want to find more and more photographers that I've never heard of before.
Yeah.
And in the past year, I found a couple, like Virginia Di Carvalho.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of grumpy photographer back here in the turn of the century named, I think it was Bucky Bornmiller.
That's a great name.
And I read a couple of stories about him, and it sounded like he was here 30, 40 years, and he may have been here for the 1906 earthquake. And yeah. I just, you know, there's a lot of photographers in between, and I'd like to find out more names and find more photos.
Yeah, I think that's something cool that you do. I mean, we both do it a little bit, but you do it a lot more, which is a lot of times I'm looking for events or things that happen that the photographers shot and that our reporters wrote about, and you seem to have a specific interest in the photographers and reporters themselves.
Well, I'm learning more as I go along, and it's just, you know, I know there's some great stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I called Vince the other day. I've never talked to Vince. When I called him about his Alcatraz photos, I mean, I probably sounded like a crazy fan, because each of these photographers, you know, I'm at the point now where I can look at a handful of photos and have a pretty good idea who shot them. I mean, they have their tendencies and talents and strengths, and it's really fun being down here and kind of almost like seeing their personalities and talents get fleshed out as you see more of their work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, my wish list, couple big ones, just categories. We don't have a lot on the key system down here, the train right. system. It's to the point where I think there's that box of negatives sitting somewhere that we're going to discover. That's a pretty big one for me. The WWE wrestling, I cannot find like Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan and the wrestlers that came before them. There's so few photos of them, and almost, I don't think there are any negatives. I think either someone stole them or they've been miscategorized somewhere, and we're going to come into this treasure trove of, you know, the Iron Sheik and Jimmy Superfly Snuka someday.
Well, I would think we would find some good ones. I mean, I think wrestling was very big in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Back in the 1950s and 60s. And I think there's one 49er. Was it Leo Nominelli?
Yes.
His summer job was wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I love it when Bob St. Clair, didn't he sell insurance? You know, all the Niners had side jobs because they didn't make enough money.
Yeah.
That's changed. I think my big one, though, that I'm going to highlight is the Beatles. We have these negatives that we can't find. We have a few photos. We have some negatives, but there's clearly a trove of negatives out there that are missing and either misfiled or they've been taken.
Right. I think I've kind of given up on that one.
Yeah.
You know, I've looked a lot of places, and I know there should be some more, but I've kind of gotten to where I'm thankful for what we have.
Yeah. Well, never give up, Bill. That's one thing we've learned down here. You don't know if it's going to show up.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts? Anything else you had on your mind?
Well, just again, I've got, you know, yeah, I the year's coming up. It's one of those, you know, even years where there's going to be a lot of events, you know, a lot of political events that took place. I'm looking forward to seeing some old convention stuff, and you know, the 70s had a lot of civil rights and anti-war demonstrations. I think we're going to find some great photos, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
well, and we're starting to catch up to when I was going to anti-war demonstrations. So who knows? Maybe I'll find myself in one of these photos.
That would be awesome. Yeah. That would be the ultimate find. Well, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for always welcoming me down here. You've never felt threatened, even as I make things a bigger mess down here and occasionally hold on to a negative pack too long or misfile it. So you've always been really nice to me down here. I appreciate it.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win. And we have a podcast studio coming in, too. That'll be a win-win-win.
Yeah.
So thanks again, Bill.
Okay. This was fun.
This was fun.
Yeah.
You are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you to Bill Van Niekerken. Our producer today is me, Peter Hartlob. Supervising producer is King Kaufman. Executive producer is Tim O'Rourke. And our editor-in-chief is Audrey Cooper. Our music is The Tide Will Rise by the Sunset Shipwrecks off their album Community. Read our columns and subscribe to The Chronicle at www.sfchronicle.com. Chronicle podcasts are on Apple Podcasts and other streaming services. Listen at www.sfchronicle.com/podcasts with an S.